listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
Every year in this country, we have about 20 serial killers, 10 of whom are apprehended, 10 of whom are on the loose, and they are, in total, responsible for some 200 deaths. So 200 victims of serial killers on a yearly basis. And what makes this particularly important for us is that the average serial killer is responsible for 10 deaths. That's a huge body count.
Dun, dun, dun. The foreboding music and the intro with the serial killer, of course, you guessed it. Mr. Taylor is back with us today to discuss serial killers. Actually, this is the Halloween special. Last year we had a psychic. Remember that? Can we? That was a year ago, Mike. Oh, I do.
Sorry, I'm eating cookies. But I can't. I can't believe it's been a whole year.
Yeah, we had what was her name? Sherry Lassiter came on, and
right.
Yeah, and she told me that my dog was what was it? He was mad that there is a stray cat outside. Remember, she's like, he's trying to tell you that there's a stray cat outside.
Yeah, she told us a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was.
Well, you can't refute that. So
that's right. I mean, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. But John's here. Actually, we're going to. Last year I did that. This year I wanted to do. I read about, or maybe I saw something on H.H. Holmes, who is, I don't know if he's America's first serial killer, but I'm obsessed with this guy now because I just been reading all this stuff on him and totally. Almost, you know, they say truth is stranger than fiction, and his story, it truly is stranger than fiction. And then the other guy we're getting on to or talk about, and I wanted to save this little clip here, but we're going to play it now just so you can, actually, I don't think they say his name on it. Let's see if you can guess who it is. And I think this one's a little quieter than the other one, so.
Johnny made his first real attempt at fitting in with the other boys when he joined the Boy Scouts. He earned merit badges in wilderness survival and campfire cooking. But despite his sense of belonging and achievement, Johnny knew he was different from the rest of the troop. The only other person who recognized this was his best friend, Barry Buscelli. One afternoon, while playing in his bedroom, Johnny shared a secret with his friend.
Johnny had his mother's silk panties and bra sitting in a bag in his closet. I was astounded. I said, Johnny, what are you doing with those things? And he said to me, he said, I wonder if I ever dress up as a woman, how I would look.
And that, of course, that's like classic serial killer. You have a bag with your mom's panties in your drawer. Do you know who that is?
No.
Johnny. They called him Johnny at the beginning.
I mean, I'd guess John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah, yeah.
I had not heard that before.
Yeah, that's who it is. So that's the other person we're going to talk about, John Wayne Gacy.
Isn't he the clown killer?
He's the clown. I thought, how appropriate with all the crazy clown stuff that's going on. We'll chat about John Wayne Gacy.
So dressing up to like women turned into dressing up like clowns?
I don't understand how that relates either.
As a woman.
Well, does it?
Well, I mean, I feel like maybe he had gay tendencies. I don't know why that doesn't.
Well, because little kids. It also goes on to saying how he dissected neighbors' pets and stuff that.
Yeah, yeah. And now that got it. You know, that's abnormal.
You just picture the little boy who's keeping his mom's, and then that guy who describes it too is a creep. He had his mom's silk panties, and it's like, all right, do you have to get creepy like that? But anyways, yeah, a kid who's keeping his mom's silk panties in his drawer. I don't know. Something's going on there. We'll talk about, which one do you want to talk about first? We'll let you decide.
It's up to you. You tell me.
God, I really enjoy H.H. Holmes, but let's start with John Wayne Gacy.
Okay.
Do you know anything about him, Savannah? Savannah's here too.
Just a very little bit.
What do you know?
He was the clown killer. Wasn't he caught? Like, did he kind of was like similar to Dahmer, right? Or
Mike knows.
He didn't eat people. He just had kids. He killed kids and put them under his house. Right?
Oh.
Yep. He had a bunch of like dead kids underneath his house that he killed. He dressed as a clown to lure him in, I guess, and then
kill him. Well, yes and no. He was, what's funny, and I guess not funny, but his neighbors, after they arrested him, said, he was the nicest guy in the world. You know, he used to do this and that. And I think one of them said, and it's from this documentary, and I quote, I would assume the Pope, if you told me who did this murder, I would guess the Pope before I guessed John Wayne Gacy. And he used to dress up as clowns to go, you know, if there was a party or something, he'd go and be the clown guy. But it just makes it more creepy. It just adds, again, to that strange allure of serial killers, that this guy dressed up like a clown. He had clown pictures around his house. But yeah, let's start. Where do we begin with John?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the clown aspect didn't have anything necessarily to do with the killing.
Yeah,
but it was something he did just kind of as a side note. And a couple of things was that if you look at the pictures, like unlike most clowns, his painting is not rounded. He's got sharp like smiles.
That's right.
And stuff, which they said clowns don't do that because it scares kids. And so if you look at his pictures of him as a clown, he looks much more menacing than a normal clown.
And that was his, he has like, there's a classic clown picture of him, which I'll tweet out or I'll put up on the website. Actually, I'll probably put it as the cover for this episode. But there's that classic picture of him. I think he's got like a little hat on, and he actually painted it. He painted it for Robert Ressler. You know anything about Robert Ressler?
Yeah, you're talking about the FBI profiler.
Yeah.
When he was in prison, he started painting, and a lot of the things that John Wayne Gacy painted were pictures of himself as a clown. I think Pogo the Clown was one of them.
That's just crazy. So when did what do you know? Like, how do you know about it, or do you know about his background or anything like that?
Gacy actually lived near where I grew up.
Really?
Prior to, that's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, there's a picture of him as a clown. Yeah, isn't that creepy? And you see that picture and you think, he's also a serial killer. I mean, again, man, I think we don't want to, you know, everyone always says you don't want to sensationalize these people, but it's hard not to, because, I mean, it just makes a good story, and it's fascinating to listen.
Yeah, and he was primarily in the Chicago area, is where he did most of the killing, mm-hmm. but he lived in Springfield, Illinois, which is about 4 miles from where I grew up prior to that. And
you're lucky to still be alive.
I know, you were a kid during this, right?
No, this was before I was born that he lived down in Springfield.
Okay.
But so he lived in Chicago, and he had a reputation. He was in the JCs. He was very active in the community. He was also like a Democratic fundraiser and very...
I know. Note the political party.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Well, and if we end up talking about Ted Bundy later, he was a Republican, so we kind of evens things out.
Makes sense.
So John Wayne Gacy was considered kind of a pillar of the community up near Chicago. And prior to that, he had been he'd gotten into some trouble. I guess he started out as a pedophile.
Yeah.
And that progressed into killing younger boys. But he had been charged with some molestation of a child years back in Iowa. And basically, through some kind of administrative issues or whatever, that information kind of got contained. And so when he went to Chicago, that didn't go with him. So nobody knew about a lot of the things that he had done that would have set off flags as far as, this isn't somebody maybe we should have around kids, or somebody we should be letting into our community, I guess.
And keep in mind, and when we talk about H.H. Holmes a little bit, right there, a trend, and you see he moved, right? He escaped his asocial past to go to a new city, and that was very similar to, actually you see that a lot with serial killers, right?
Yeah, and I think they get lucky a lot too, of them that have killed a lot of people, is that they're just certain things that either, like in this case, he had violated his parole like 2 days after the end of his parole, kind of thing, where mm-hmm. had he done it 2 days earlier, he would have gone back to prison, and then the person didn't show up to court, so then he's able to walk free. So there's a lot of things like that. But yeah, he basically, by starting a new life, he was able to start over without having any kind of that baggage.
And I wonder, it was different back then too, right? I mean, you could do that, and it's not like today you can just put a person's name in. I don't even know what, I'm sure there's something you can, a sex offender list. They have those all over the place, right?
Right.
You could put someone's name in, and you can actually see how close they are to your house, which I think is good. But you didn't, back then there was no technology. And this was in the, I want to say it was the late 60s that this happened with him.
Yeah, most of his killing was more in the 70s, but it looked like there were some indicators of that in the early or late 60s and then into the 70s. And he'd been married twice, mm-hmm. and it sounds like he told his second wife that he was bisexual, and that kind of ended the marriage.
Okay.
And I'm not sure whether that was an accurate statement or he's kind of hedging his bets, because most of his desires were towards young men. He mm-hmm. didn't attack any females. And then once he got divorced a second time, basically just he went from having to kind of conceal his activities and lie about where he was with his wife. He had free rein to basically go out and do what he wanted. And so he was a very dangerous individual at that point.
Sure. Something like, was it his total body count 30 or something like that?
Yeah, 33, I think.
Carr is in here too. What was that? Did we watch a... There was something we watched about a serial killer recently, and God, what was it? And he would always get angry about, there was some missing child back in like he had done all these murders, and then prior to that, there'd always been this questionable child that was missing that he was seen with that they never pinned it to, and then they finally found out, you know, it was him. What was that? It's gonna drive me nuts. It was. Do you remember watching it?
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, I just it. I mean, a lot of these people, it's not something that just dawns on them. You know, this is something that they're brought up with. He, another similarity between him and others is he had an abusive father. There you go. His dad was an alcoholic. Pretty typical.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about. Thinking about the childhood aspect of this with preparing for this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I mean, one is a lot of that information comes from the killer themselves.
All right. Right.
So you got to be skeptical with that. And it appears that his father was very overbearing. He may have been physically abusive towards him. It doesn't sound anything. I mean, obviously it wasn't a happy childhood,
right?
But it doesn't sound anything to a point where you could see, you know, just such a horrible environment that you're like, yeah, I could see how that could really take somebody off the rails.
I would like to think that that's the case, because otherwise these people can just pop up at any time. They could be hanging around. Oh, Cropsey? Was it Cropsey?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was Cropsey.
Cropsey? What? You know what I'm talking about?
I know Cropsey, yeah.
Do you know Cropsey? Was it Cropsey? I don't think so.
I think it was.
Totally forgot what we were just talking about.
Well,
John Wayne,
like,
Gacy?
Oh, yeah. You were talking about how you'd like to believe that they were abused, that some sort of extenuating factor happened.
Yeah.
So that you don't believe that these people are just kind of randomly born.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not true, though. I think that's the problem, is that these people can just be randomly born. I think that...
You're very defensive.
Oh, am I? Really?
No, I'm kidding. Saying it. They have normal childhoods. They can be females who have their doctorate.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'm not defensive at all.
I agree. I don't think it has anything it might have some things. There might be triggers as a kid. Maybe the abusive part triggers something. But I think if you take all the serial killers, and you probably know better than the rest of us, did they all have abusive childhoods? No, of course not. So I think that's just one thing people like to attach to it. Well, yeah. He had an abusive childhood and this is the way he did this. I mean, I dissected animals when I was a kid. I know we talked about that before. Whoa. Never people's pets, but
that's
I would
like
catch
a
things.
Terrible.
I was a kid. I was like, I was in elementary school. And
come
I got,
on, we drink their
I
brains.
I got a science kit when I was 8 years old or whatever. And it came with like a little dissection thing. I'm not lying to you. I really had all this.
I'm not lying.
We'd catch frogs, and there was other wild animals, and then we just cut them open.
Oh my god!
Frogs, neighbors, dogs, whatever, cats.
I'm doing all right.
So we think. I notice you got a project going on in the backyard. You're doing lots of digging in your basement.
I don't think anybody was accusing you of lying. I think the problem was we were believing you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Man, I was like, wow, what am I? 35? Almost 20 something years ago.
Okay. No, that's
I was
cool.
Kid, I was interested in biology.
Mm-hmm.
I was.
Who was it? One of these guys was H.H. Holmes was a doctor. He was introduced. I mean, he was interested in biology too.
So why do you think that it's just sort of random?
What do you mean by why do I think it's random?
Well, I mean, you seem to agree with us that these people can kind of just, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I thought that you just sort of agreed with us that these people can just be randomly born, randomly pop up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me that, you know, if you get down to the discussion of nature versus nurture, I mean, and I was my feeling is that there's nothing that is 100% genetic. Like, I mean, maybe somebody could come up with something, but almost everything is a mix. And I would think that that's the case with this as well. Mm-hmm. I think that there are people that could just be bad seeds, and some of them are. Mm-hmm. But I think there are environmental factors that play into this. I think that probably an unloving environment, probably a violent environment could contribute, mm-hmm. but it doesn't cause it. I mean, for example, H.H. Holmes had two brothers. Mm-hmm. So whatever they didn't become serial killers, mass murderers. So whatever he endured, you know, assuming they were whole brothers, you know, they had the same genetics, they had the same upbringing, and they didn't end up killing dozens of people.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Genetics is a tricky subject. That's why remember 23andMe? Maybe you don't. It was a thing where you could spit into a bottle. I think you still can, and they'll tell you your genetic makeup. But people are looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, I have the pancreatic cancer gene, and they're like, this means I'm going to have pancreatic. It doesn't mean that at all. So things have to be expressed. Things have to, I forget what the word is for that, but they have to. You know, you can have all the worst genes in the world and be completely normal. But I think there is, I don't know, you're right. I don't know if there's a genetic component to it. Because, I mean, even if you look at antisocial personality disorder or the one with kids, what's the one? ODD?
ADD? ADHD?
No.
Oppositional defiance disorder, ODD?
What's it?
Oppositional defiance disorder.
Yeah.
Oppositional.
Thank you. I'm self-diagnosed with dyslexia. I can't speak. I can't. Yeah. So people with ODD, it's like 100% that they're going to become antisocial. And in fact, I think it's the same criteria. It's just one is prior to 18 and one is after 18. But these are, yes, it's technically a medical diagnosis, but it is, it's poor, it's poor. All right, like, say you're in a situation and you don't respond to the stimuli in a healthy way. What's that word I'm looking for? Come on, guys.
Like your response to something?
Yeah. But yes, thank you. Maladaption. Yeah. Yay. So it's
like a game show.
Yeah.
Guess what Kevin's
you
thinking.
Get a shot of So yeah, it's a maladaptive disorder. Anyone can have a personality disorder. In fact, everyone has. If you can go in the DMS-4, or now I think it's the DMS-5, it's the diagnostic mental health book. You can go in there and read mental health criteria for personality, borderline personality DSM. Disorder, history, DSM, thank you.
She won two prizes.
Told you, dyslexia.
She's up two.
I know.
On the board two. I still have nothing.
So you can go through there. I don't want to mess with him anymore because I'm going to find my dog dissected hanging in the back porch. What the hell?
She said, seriously? Damn, Savannah. Seriously, that guy is creepy over there. Why'd you invite him, Kevin?
You can find people you know in the diagnoses easily. You can go and be like, oh my God, that's this person. But it's everyone has a little bit of that. It's when you have these poor responses to abuse or anything. I mean, if you feel slighted because you're the youngest of four brothers or something like that, you know, it can be anything that triggers this poor response, and then you become. Even psychopaths and sociopaths, same thing, not a medical diagnosis, but falls under description, and those people tend to be antisocial and whatever.
Yeah, I think that serial killers, that they're not definable within like the psychological terms, and that they're a very, very extreme rare case. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason I say that is because all the things you describe, they're all those things, yet they're not just violent. They're mm-hmm. not just psychopathic in that they have no empathy. They're willing to go out and hurt people they don't know for their own satisfaction and gratification.
Right.
That is a very, very scary and very unusual, luckily, thing. I mean, that's not somebody that gets in fights all the time. That's not somebody who beats his wife. I mean, this is somebody who derives pleasure from hurting, torturing, and killing people that he doesn't know.
Well, they lack empathy, which is the big thing.
Right, but I mean, 1% of the population lacks empathy or is a psychopath, and a lot of those people aren't violent. Mm-hmm. So you have to be a psychopath, you have to be violent, and you have to have something wrong with you, basically, and I don't know how else to describe it, that you've got this component within you that you're willing and able to do that, that you're willing to go out and seek people and hurt them for your own joy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's completely different than almost any killing that takes place normally. There's usually something behind it.
Yeah. They use you for their gratification.
Yeah. And I take everything that, if you listen to some of the interviews with the serial killers or read interviews that they've done, I take it all with a grain of salt. I feel like they're all in some way, they have an agenda. They're trying to manipulate. They're trying to justify themselves, but that they describe it as like a compartmentalization within their body. I heard Ted Bundy was talking about the fact that he's like, I'm a normal person. I do the things that normal people do, but that there's this small part of me, this very dark, dangerous part of me.
Where he kills sororities.
Right. And
didn't he kill like a bunch of them in one
sorority? Yeah, in Florida.
Yeah.
And it is, it's very scary. But if you think about his actions on a normal day, he is fairly normal in most respects. Mm-hmm. And that's the scary thing about serial killers too, is that you're not going to most likely be able to pick them out. They are come across as a normal person 99% of the time.
I really like that point, by the way. I feel like people need to remember that, because we all think that we would know. And sometimes, like when John Wayne Gacy, when that comes out and you find out, I bet half of his neighbors said, oh, I knew.
Well, they were saying that he was nice.
I know some of them did. Yeah, I'm sure some of them did. And those are the honest ones who remember things correctly. But I bet you half of them also were like, oh, yeah, I knew the whole time. I knew there was something off.
Well, just think all the people in your head, right? And then think about if one of them, just pick someone in your head and think if they got arrested for serial killers. Would you be like, yeah, I guess I could see that.
I've tried to do that actually recently with some people.
Crime writer John Taylor was arrested this weekend with a bevy of human heads in his freezer. I'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah. I see it.
They'd be like, have you seen his internet history?
Like, yeah, that's right.
Done.
That's right. So, yeah, what do you think about the 20 people are out there at any given time?
I mean, they're just extrapolating statistics. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it means anything or not.
Well, that number is growing because the population's growing pretty quickly. That's right. So that number has to be higher now.
Yeah, I would think so.
So you're thinking 30 now. So 300. That's like, even
31, maybe.
It could be 31. They said there was 20 and each one killed 10, so it was 200. That's four people in each state that's going to be killed by a serial killer, roughly. That's why you arm yourself to the teeth at all times. So here's the DSM-5 criteria. Failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behaviors as indicated by repeatedly performing acts that are grounds for arrest. That's number one. Okay. Deception as indicated by repeated lying, use of aliases. So they do that a lot, right? They always use aliases. Conning others for personal profit or pleasure. This is all H.H. Holmes when we get into him. Mm-hmm. Impulsivity or failure to plan ahead.
Not the organized serial killers.
That's right. Irritability and aggressiveness. All right.
Is this psychopaths or what are you?
This is asocial personality disorder. Is indicated by repeated physical fights or assaults. Reckless disregard for safety of self or others. Consistent irresponsibility, as indicated by repeated failure to sustain consistent work behavior. And number seven is lack of remorse. They say it's like 80 to 90% of people in prison they have this criteria or they fall into this.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like if you repeatedly break the law, you're going to pretty much fit that criteria for the most part.
You're just getting caught with it. Yeah. But yeah.
That's weird because I thought a lot of people who are in jail because of pot. Yep. I'm not trying to get like off topic, but it surprises me that I guess asocial people only smoke.
Well, I guess if you go to like, if you think about your violent criminals, maybe that's what they mean. 90% of your violent criminals. Okay. So people that armed robbery or assault with a deadly weapon or
that
whatever.
That makes more sense. Yes. Yeah.
But so where were we on him? He was young. Anyway, so we think he was most likely a psychopath. Most likely, who knows if he was brought up crazy.
Yeah.
And back to the point where it's nice to think that way, because then it can't just be anyone. It has to be someone that has this issue wrong with them, or their parents abuse them. And as a parent, I would like to think that it has to go there, because then I can prevent my kids from becoming serial killers. But every now and then I'm like, Carl, where's the dog? I don't know. I saw Mike in our backyard. We had a mouse problem. Then Mike moved in. All the mice went missing.
Oh, that's terrible.
We found little jars of mice bones and possum bones.
I mean, if you found jars of stuff, that'd probably
Jeffrey Dahmer did that. Yeah. Didn't he dissect them, put them in his...
And then he ate them.
Well, the people. I don't know if he ate the animals.
He ate everything. I don't know.
I caught him just gnawing on a table.
I'm just making up stuff. I didn't eat him, though.
All right, that's good. You're off the hook.
But you wanted to talk about H.H. Holmes. And one of the things about him is that he doesn't necessarily meet my definition of a serial killer.
Wait, before we get in there, can we finish off on John Wayne? Because there's a lot more. Yeah. So, because I really want to get into H.H. Holmes, but that one I want to get deep into. His thing was, he had that arrest, and then he married, and here's the crazy thing, then he married another woman, and apparently she didn't know. I mean, would you marry a guy who's like, yeah, I just got out of jail for having sex with a 15-year-old boy? Exactly.
Right.
But I don't know.
I don't think he led with that.
I love how you asked me that question, like there's any question about it. Like, let's confirm with the female first.
Yeah. I don't think that was like on his match.com profile.
That's right. You sit down at a table and you're like, law requires me to lead with this. If you sit down on a date with a guy and he says, legally I'm supposed to tell you this, just get up and walk away. My lawyers say that I should lead with this. But yeah, he got married again. And then I can't remember what set off his second... Well, it wasn't a second round. It was really most of it happened after he got divorced, or?
Yeah, he was killing at this point, but it increased a lot once he got divorced, because he just had more time on his hands to be able to pursue young men.
Okay. And he would put up like ads. He was a construction worker or something like that.
Yeah, he did a lot of things. I mean, he picked up runaways. He had businesses, so he went to hire people, and he had employees, and he would get them back to his house. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times he tried to get these kids drunk before he would make advances on them. Mm-hmm.
Chloroform, too. One guy who escaped him said he had chloroform put on his face.
I read a book about Gacy when I was a kid, and I was always impressed with that kid that got away from him.
Because
that
kid the graphic
was,
novel.
Yeah, exactly. I was like in eighth grade, I think.
Oh, okay.
But he was a wrestler in high school.
John Wayne Gacy was?
No, the kid that got away from him.
Oh, okay.
And so he was the only kid to get away from him, and not only did he get away from Gacy, but he put Gacy in handcuffs.
Oh, really?
And then Gacy basically talked into letting him go, but then the kid left.
Wow.
I kind of like the idea of this kid basically being able to just completely take him down.
Yeah, because he's not a specimen.
No, I think he was 5'8", 230.
Yeah,
I
mean, he was a clown. Chubby guy. Yeah. When you see him, though, when you look at his picture, you're like, oh, yeah, serial killer. Even without the makeup on, he's just a creepy looking dude. All creepy dudes are serial killers. That's what I said. Creepy looking dudes. Us good looking people, we don't have anything to worry about. Except
Bundy.
Yeah, yeah, he was a good looking guy. So I guess he had some issues going.
Wait a second. So that guy escaped from him. Did he tell the police or anything?
No, he didn't report him.
And I think he didn't know till after.
They tried to chloroform him, and he didn't think to report it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, because there was another person that had some kind of run-in with him, and nobody believed him. But
he might have been embarrassed, too. Because in those days, I mean, he was going there. Well, I don't know what he was going there for, but if he was going there for a sexual tryst, he didn't want to tell anyone.
Is that likely with John Wayne Gacy looking the way he did?
Which is weird. So maybe not. Because the last guy...
He's not attractive.
Someone went missing named Priest?
Peast. Something like that, yeah.
And that's when, so this kid went.
I feel
and
like he, saying priest was a Freudian slip, but.
it looks like it. Priest, whatever. This kid goes missing, and his family are obviously, I don't know if the other kids were just runaways or what the deal was. I think he said it was hitchhiking, so they weren't missed. Or maybe he had brought them from another place, but this kid was like top of his class. He was like a good looking kid, quarterback. You know, he was like I don't know, Mr. Perfect, and he went missing.
And like, they could also, the other kids, I mean, some of them, they knew they were missing, but with Peace, he specifically told his parents where he was going. So they knew he was going to meet Gacy.
That's right.
So then he turns up missing. So when once the police started looking into him, they go back and they find his arrest and conviction in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so their antennas are up. We got this guy that has been, you know, convicted of sexually molesting a child. Multiple times he's been arrested for it. So he's on their radar. They think he's involved. And so now it's kind of a matter of time with them tracking him. And he was pretty cocky with the police. You know, he kind of invited them in and sat down with them when they did a search warrant, because he had the bodies buried in a crawl space under the house. Mm-hmm. And it was like a trap door in a closet, so he didn't think they would ever find it.
And what's creepy is they talk about how he would give them cocktails and sit around in this game room. And it's like your typical 70s game room, right? It's got like that paneling on the walls and just creepy looking. It was just creepy looking. And they'd be down there, and one of them used the bathroom. You could smell like bodies, but he didn't, for some reason they're looking for bodies, and he didn't think, hey, they might be buried under the house. He thought it was just a musty odor or something.
Yeah, I guess they were saying the first time they did a search warrant, it was cold.
Okay.
And so there was smell, but that they were kind of rationalizing it. Mm-hmm. And then the second time when they did a search warrant, the one police officer used the restroom, and when he flushed the toilet, he smelled it, and it was hotter, and he immediately recognized the smell of like decomposing corpses.
Apparently this guy had no foresight. You know, like, you're gonna bury people under your house, it might stink.
He was putting down lime. Yeah, I don't know how much lime he had.
Because when they talk about after they arrested him, and he knew they were onto him, and he was going to kill himself or something, and he was going around different stops to do something, and they ended up picking him up on marijuana charges because he bought some weed or something before he killed himself, and then they caught him with everything else. But when they would take apart this house, people would come from all over, people who were missing kids too, and the stench would just go out onto the street, and you can see people on the old video footage with their hands over their mouths just trying not to, ugh. And then luckily, I guess they discovered it in the winter, because that would keep it down a little bit, but still. Just gruesome, grisly.
So who owns that house now?
I don't know. I don't even know if it's there.
I mean, I did a map quest. I mean, it looks like just another house. I assume they tore down that house and put up a new one, but there's just a small single family home sitting on that location.
Could you even live there, though? Gosh. I mean,
give good rent, probably.
Sounds like, yeah.
Some people would want to live there.
I wonder if the people who own it know.
Maybe.
Let's see. New home starts taking shape where Gacy's house once stood. This is from 1988.
So what I'm confused about, though, is you started talking about Peast, and how is he related to Gacy?
He was the last one that went missing that basically led to him getting arrested, the last kid.
Okay.
Because
it wasn't Peast who was like inviting them in with it. That was, you were talking about John Wayne Gacy. Who was doing that. Okay.
Yeah. Peast was, no, he was just, he was going for a construction job, an interview for a construction job, and then he never came back. And I can't remember. Oh, because then they knew to look at him. And then when they looked at Gacy, they figured it out. But they caught him. Yeah. So, nice guy. And then then he went to jail. And then he started saying, oh, yeah, remember all that? Yeah, I didn't actually do that. Yeah, okay, dude. And then they killed him.
And then he was executed.
Yep. 14 years on death row, they executed. Robert Ressler. I always want to say that's his name. He's the guy who coined the term serial killer.
Ron, I think.
But, Ron. Yeah. Okay. He came to my college during my undergrad years, and he gave us a talk or whatever in my criminal justice class. And he talked about how he went and interviewed this guy quite a bit, actually. They knew each other and he was a profiler. He wanted to get to know these people to kind of build up a database of what these people would be like. And he said, it was like the day before he died, he visited him. And then he said, when he was walking out, it was like the week, it was really close to his death. He said, I'll be seeing you later, Ron. And he's like, what does that mean? And then he went home, and then he woke up in the morning, middle of the night, what felt like pressure on his chest, like he was having a heart attack. And he grabbed his chest and he said he fell to the floor. And then it just went away. And he went to call 911, and then it dawned on him. He looked at the time, and they had just executed Gacy. Creepy, huh?
That's crazy. Yeah. That's really crazy.
This is an FBI profile. I mean, you'd think that this guy's telling the truth, but I don't know. Everyone's a little different, I guess. But yeah, I believed his story. So maybe he did. Maybe he came in and grabbed his heart. One last murder. No. And he got sucked into hell.
We should have had Sherry Lasseter. She could have.
She could have told
from
us.
From last year's show, she could have told you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Where's she at?
I don't know. I was going to call her again, but...
She could validate that story.
That's right.
She'll search the whatever realm that is.
And yeah.
With her, I was hoping she'd be talking to ghosts and stuff. I was a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I wish she had to.
It was kind of like...
Yeah, it was... I don't know. It was all fortune telling.
Yeah.
It was like... tarot card type stuff.
She's like, I'll tell you about your life. John, you like to write and laugh and you wear a Fitbit. And then you know what I mean? It's like, tell me something that she told me. My reading was, I like to search for knowledge and bring people together. I'm like, lady, I'm doing a podcast with a group of 10 people here. Give me something. I want to know if something's going to fall on my head in the next 10 days. Can you tell me, like, stay away from escalators? Stay away from escalators the next 3 weeks. I don't know. Don't fly. Okay.
I heard a fortune teller say a long time ago that Hillary Clinton was going to win the presidency. But I remember thinking it wasn't really that clear of a fortune just because the Republican candidates even then were looking pretty badly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really much of a... It's not even much of a guess nowadays. The Wait What If podcast likes to say apolitical within the realm.
Sorry.
So I don't... No, I'm joking. Everyone knows who listens to this that I am a staunch Democrat. Give it all away. So, H.H. Holmes.
I don't know who that is. So who is this person you guys have been talking about for the past 30 minutes?
I want to say he's America's first serial killer, right?
Arguably.
Yeah. I mean, could you call... Billy the Kid a serial killer?
So the definition of serial killer, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with the conventional definition, which is basically it could be two or more, three or more people killed with a cooling off period in between, which mm-hmm. means that basically it wasn't a mass murder or a spree killing.
Okay.
To me, that doesn't necessarily constitute a serial killer, because then you could have a mafia hitman's a serial killer, that kind of thing. To me, a serial killer is somebody who has killed multiple people in separate occasions, but also there's usually a sexual component to it of some sort, and that there is also, it's done for gratification. Mm-hmm. It's not done for a means to an end. Okay. You're not killing people because you're mad at them because they backed into your car, for example. That's not somebody who's a serial killer. It's somebody who is killing, and usually they kill a specific type. But that's kind of how I constitute a serial killer, which is why I kind of have issues with H.H. Holmes. I'm a little skeptical of a lot of the information, just doing a lot of research. I'm not sure I'm buying all of it with that.
Okay. That's why we have you on here. So so someone like Billy the Kid wouldn't be a serial killer because he was just a criminal and he was good with a gun. And if people got in his way, he obviously killed them.
Right.
And then that, I guess, would be Jesse James, same thing. And I mean, they were probably sociopaths, obviously. Great, great movie. The assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. You've seen that? Anyone? Gosh. Well, just went down a great avenue there that we could all talk about it. I guess not. No, I'm just kidding. So H.H. Holmes back in 1800s. So how much do you know about him? Because I just wrote stuff down.
Yeah. I've heard of him. I'm aware of him.
Okay. So back in the 1800s, this guy was a doctor. He was very smart. He was brought up, again, with an alcoholic, abusive father and all that stuff. But he had a lot of family, a lot of kids, a lot of... you're right. And he's the only one that really had this issue that happened to him. This not issue, but he became a psychopath that killed people. He said when he was a child, he was picked on by his friends, and his friends locked him in a doctor's office, because in those days the bodies were just laying around, and they took a skeleton and like wrapped it around him or something. Instead of being frightened, he was aroused by it in a way.
They called it bullying, mm-hmm. which I don't know if locking someone in a doctor's office is bullying. I guess maybe in the 1800s it was.
Stay in here and get better.
Exactly. Read that medical book.
I don't know
what they were telling him to do.
Well, they took the skeleton though, and they put it up to him. And
apparently he had. I mean, this. I'm assuming this is his version of it, but yeah. that he had a fear of skeletons or dead bodies, which I don't know who doesn't,
right?
Except for people who are around him on a regular basis. And that by these kids supposedly putting him into this environment, he not only got over his fear, but then he got this like obsession interest in dissecting, kind of like Mike did.
It's all true. I don't know.
I'm not lying, Mike. So that's his defense.
It's the best defense ever.
He used to, and this is the best thing about it. He went to he started dissecting animals. He started working on different things like that, and then he enrolled in med school. And this is, I think, one of the big things about him is he, and I think this is why I enjoyed reading about him is. So you got like John Wayne Gacy, and you've got Ted Bundy, and you got what's the other guy there? Jeffrey Dahmer. There's like a creep factor there. Like,
yeah.
When you read about them, you just feel dirty. Like you just want to take a because it's just gross. Yeah. They're just gross people. This guy was just a big asshole. Like there was creepy things he did, but it was an asshole factor. Like everyone he got into, like who got into his life, he totally screwed. He was a con man. He was just a jerk, right? So he went to med school at a young age, like 18 or whatever they did back then. He was smart. And he would go, would steal the cadavers from the library and disfigure them and then claim that they were victims of an accident and open up life insurance policies on them. So basically take a cadaver, name them, open up. Because back then, I mean, it wasn't like you didn't need social security number or anything. You could just open up a life insurance policy on someone. He'd mangle him up, kill him in an accident, and then collect the insurance money from him. And yeah. Like, here's the body.
Many of his actions seem to be almost exclusively dominated by greed.
Yeah.
Which is something that's very odd and doesn't fit in with the rest of it. But yeah, he made a lot of his actions were designed to make him money, which doesn't fit in with the other kind of the serial killers who are kind of gratification based.
But totally psychopathic, because who could just sit here and mangle a body and be like, man, this is going to get me a couple $1,000 from, you know?
Oh yeah. No, yeah, I don't think he was normal.
Yeah.
In that
definitely,
realm.
Definitely wacky.
Well, if it's already dead.
Oh,
right? Oh, but wait.
Right. I'm with it.
That was a test.
Yeah. But I thought,
serious?
Dang it.
Mike jumped in on it.
I thought you killed the animals though.
Now the story.
He's like Kevin. It's very hard to survive a dissection.
Well, I mean, there's like a wait a minute. Why is this? Why would you do this about me? I want to agree with this. Let's get back to
this. Is an intervention, Mike.
This is why we invited you for this podcast.
This isn't
we
even.
Knew there was something wrong with you. So we brought you here. We faked the whole podcast. The authorities are outside.
Yeah, yeah.
They're taking
what's the
away.
Secret? Cheeseburger.
Pineapples. Now I'm all off. No, but who would do that for money? I think you said who would.
Yeah, you'd have to be kind of psychopathic to do that,
I suppose. I mean, unless you're in a gang and you're just or a mob.
But even that, thing. Like, let's say I knew. All right, I'm part of this gang or mafioso family, and I need to support my family, and my job is going to kill someone. I still wouldn't enjoy it. Maybe I could learn to enjoy it. I don't know.
Did he enjoy it?
I don't know. They didn't really, but I assume he must have, because he would steal cadavers. You don't take dead bodies out of a library and be like,
for money, you might.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you enjoy it. It's like, well, if I can get rich doing this, then why work like these mm-hmm. other sad saps out there?
That's true. Because his wife, his
it's all right there.
His first wife, I think he had three. Excuse me. His first wife. All right, his first wife left him. I'm starting to throw up from this. Oh, it's nasty. No, his first wife obviously left him. And so he moved on, of course, and did other scams. They don't really get into what it was, because the things I could find just said other scams. But here's a little creepy thing. So he spent the next couple of years working various jobs and continue with his scams. After he moved to Moores Forks, New York, a rumor began spreading that Holmes was seen with the little boy who later disappeared. That's all. He claimed the boy went back to his home in Massachusetts. He totally killed him. I mean, if someone's arrested and killed for being a serial killer and you were seen with the little boy, that isn't... I mean, he's dead, right? Well, now he is. It was back in the 1800s. But
I mean, that's kind of one of the things that kind of got to the big numbers with H.H. Holmes, is that anything that anybody that was missing anything around him, it was attributed to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think probably some of them were, but I don't think all of them.
This story takes a twist. Yeah, this isn't, it's so far, it's just this guy's an asshole, right? And he still is an asshole, but it gets a little better. So he traveled to Philadelphia, where he became, so I guess in those days you could be a druggist, you could be a pharmacist just by being a doctor and having your MD. So he, and I think, didn't they used to treat people, like you could go to the druggist and be like, I don't know, my mom has the consumption, and they'd be like, okay, take this and take it home to her, I guess. I don't know. Seems like it makes sense, and I got a microphone in front of me, so it's got to be true. So let's see here. He
Chicago.
Okay, yeah. So he moved to Chicago, and he decided to change his name.
Where you're from? You're lucky to be alive.
That's right. That's right. And you are just about that age. So
yeah.
What was his name? He changed it to H.H. Holmes. His original name was
Herman Munson or something like that. It was something.
Mudgett.
Munster. Yeah.
It was Herman, M-U-D-G-E-T-T. Herman Webster Mudgett, born in 1861 in New Hampshire. All right. Yeah. Represent.
I like, though, that he graduated medical school, and then they said he went to work for a pharmacy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to me, I'm, like, picturing working, like, at a Walgreens.
Yeah.
Is that what, like, back then, you're a medical doctor?
If you needed something, like, let's say you needed, I don't know if they had acetaminophen back then. Did they? Did they have acetaminophen? Let's say they did. I don't know if they did, but.
Savannah, when was that?
I have a feeling that wasn't until the 60s.
Oh, okay.
I don't really know.
So let's say they needed a painkiller. Well, the druggist would go, he'd take his little powders out and be like, okay, one, you know, 15th of a gram of
opiate.
You know, yeah, opiate.
I think they would just use opium.
Yeah. And then, you know, a little bit of aspirin and mix it together, and they put it in your little pills for you. And then that's why you ever see those old movies, they go, and they taste it, and they're like, oh my God, that's poison. Because these guys knew that's what they did. I'm thinking specifically of It's a Wonderful Life. Remember when the druggist tastes it?
They did that on Miami Vice a lot too.
Did they? Oh, that was
to check to make
cocaine.
Sure it was cocaine.
Yeah. yeah. So
you didn't watch Miami Vice, Savannah?
No, dude.
Miami Vice. the old school Miami Vice.
So wait, what did he do that was creepy though?
Mm. We're getting there. So then he moves in with this woman. No, I don't know if he had a relationship with her. I can't remember, but there's this woman that owns a drugstore in. So he keeps going from drugstore to drugstore, and he goes to this drugstore in Chicago, and I think they had a romantic relationship or something like that. And he took out all these mortgages again. He was a scamster, so he took out all these mortgages, all these loans on the equipment at the store and all this stuff. And I honestly can't remember what happened, but he ended up benefiting from it.
Yeah, he ended up buying the pharmacy from her.
Okay.
And then she mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, she disappeared
shortly thereafter.
Yep. And then he took that money and he built a building next door. And I would love to know if this building's still standing.
It is not. The Murder Castle.
The Murder Castle, they called it. So he built this massive brick castle, basically, in the middle of Chicago. And what was crazy about it is the bottom floor he rented out, because remember, this guy wants to make money, so he had like stores in there, and every now and then like someone would come in, a clerk would own a store, then they would disappear and then someone else would come in, right? So all these people disappear around him. And then the upstairs was kind of like a hotel, I guess. In those days it'd be like a hostel, you could come and stay for a week or whatever. But what happened is he would have like he designed it so hallways would like go to a doorway that just went to nothing, like a free fall into the basement, or some doorways you'd open up and there would be nothing but a brick wall behind it. And then they describe how other hallways are made to make you feel like, I don't know, they would make them wobbly. I don't know. He just had this place like a maze. He had one room that only had an entrance, and I can't figure out how he got people in there. Or there was a one-way door, and then it would lock, and then he would come in through a trap door through the ceiling, and they were all wired with gas. So he would go downstairs, and let's say someone would go up in the room, and he did some sick, and this is where it gets a little sick, though. Because he would put people into a room.
It got sick like 5 minutes ago.
Well, okay.
Mike was nodding right along with this up until this.
Yeah. Like, this guy's weird. Wait a minute, he gasses. Okay, I understand that.
Let me take notes.
So he gassed his people. He put them in a room, and then he would just forget about them for like 3 weeks and let them starve to death and suffocate. He'd put them in a bank vault and let them suffocate.
Actually, they would thirst to death before they starve to death. But okay, please continue.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But remember, back in those days, they didn't have a lot of fat on their bodies, so maybe they did.
Thirst to death. Yes.
Yes. So they would die without eating or drinking. Without drinking.
So wait, why is there a question in your mind as to whether or not this guy was a serial killer?
A number of things. One, because he seemed to be much more motivated. I mean, he's a sadist. I mean, a lot of the things he did was torture. There's no sexual element to what he was doing as far as I've found.
Well, a lot of his victims were his previous women.
Which is another thing. Serial killers traditionally, and I'm not a big believer in using terms to like kind of put people in a group. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for simplification purposes. I don't really think it provides really any knowledge.
Yeah.
Calling somebody a psychopath or whatever. It's just kind of so everybody is talking about the same thing. Uh-huh. But serial killers do not traditionally kill the people around them. Like, you know, most serial killers don't kill their wives or their kids. They kill a set group of people, and they're usually strangers. And the fact that this guy is killing people that are around him, his mistresses and people that are showing up, that's very different to me. So that kind of seemed odd. There was no sexual component, and he also did not have a set type. He just would kill indiscriminately.
Yeah, he did a lot of different.
And to me, that fits the, like, what people see in movies. So everybody's like, yeah, that's how I would expect it to be, right? You just, he's dangerous. He'll kill anybody. But that's not how most serial killers operate. So he's just, to me, he's kind of a one-off there.
Okay. Definitely.
What is he?
I don't know. Definitely
is he even
crazy.
More rare than a serial killer?
He would be, yeah. So, I mean, he'd just be an incredibly dangerous person because serial killers, I mean, obviously, they're dangerous when they're in their stalking mode or if they're pursuing someone. But, I mean, the people around them seemed to be relatively safe, and most of them felt like they were decent people, whereas with H.H. Holmes, you know, there were a lot of people disappearing around him. And then the other thing, and I have not read a ton on H.H. Holmes, but I don't know any examples of anyone that got away from him. Like, no one that he tried to kill and didn't.
Yeah, because how could you? You're trapped in
a room. So, yeah, that kind of makes me a little suspicious. Like, is he that much better of a killer than everyone else that he was just that effective?
Well, he also had a right-hand man. I forgot about him. They called him... So, the district attorney who was prosecuting him, the guy's name was Pete's? Priest? No, Benjamin Peitzel. Peitzel. Yeah. He was a carpenter with a criminal past, and he was his right-hand man for criminal schemes. A district attorney later described Peitzel as Holmes's tool, his creature. I just picture like what's that? You know, in the
old,
what's that? Yeah. Like, yes, master. Yeah, just comes out of the woodwork.
Yeah. This sounds a lot like you guys watch American Horror Story?
Yeah.
The fifth season, The Hotel, whatever that one is.
I never finished that.
I started it.
It's yeah, I started it. And then once the dude got sodomized by this creature.
I haven't watched that yet.
It was the very
episode three.
This is on the first episode.
Is it?
Yeah, it was like the first episode. I watched it. We were like, Car and I wanted to watch something scary.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it's funny that you missed that completely.
I know.
Like, that sounds like a pretty dramatic experience.
We're watching this.
It was just a scene in the show, but I do remember it now.
Well, you always expect.
I'm like coming out as the worst person.
It's like, who hasn't sodomized someone with a spike where your penis is supposed to be?
I'm like, that's weird to you guys? I don't understand this at all.
Well, we wanted a Halloween show to watch. We're like, let's watch something scary. Instead, we're watching The Exorcist, which is
it gets better. Right. I mean, episode 3 or 4, it gets a lot better. But okay. The hotel,
I love the American Horror Story.
H.H. Holmes character comes out in episode 2.
Oh, okay.
Of that series, you don't see him until then.
Okay,
but he reminds me because he's the guy who built the hotel.
Oh.
And he intentionally built all these crazy rooms that you're talking about, the hallways at least.
So that's where they got that. Yeah.
I think the television show is probably influenced by that. If it's true.
I think it is because the first season.
It's a great show.
The first season. Remember the doctor? It is a good show.
I don't know.
She's creeping close.
It's creepy. That show is definitely bizarre. Like, it always gets in the weird sexual twist. There's always something weird going on.
I think it's great.
Yeah, it's good, but it's weird. But anyways, the first season. Remember the first season. The doctor. Remember the doctor that would perform abortions in the basement.
That was second season.
Second season.
Was that second season? Yeah. No, that was the first season.
No, the first one.
Murder House was season 1.
Yeah, and that's Murder House.
No,
No, wait, you're thinking of the asylum, the right?
No, no. I'm thinking Murder House. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the house was originally.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, it was the originally. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then they had the one of the babies, and that was that clown thing that would come shooting out. What was his name? It was like there was a name for it, and it would just pop up. That's what. That's another cool thing about the show is like just some random creature will show up, scare the shit out of you, and then you don't see him again for the rest of the show. You're like, what was that? But yeah, that clown baby thing, I think, was because this guy, there was a part where he who knows if they loosely base these people, but he was convincing, you know, and again, this shows what kind of asshole he is. He was having an affair with this woman who had a daughter, and he got her pregnant, and then the husband left, so he said, she demanded that he marry her, and he's like, I'll only marry you if you get an abortion. And
you're talking about H.H. Holmes.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Okay.
And then he was like, but I have to do it, and then he killed her, and then he killed the daughter too.
And, and so asshole. That's your definition of an asshole.
That's a total it's a total asshole.
He's just a jerk.
That's what she said to him as he was killing her. You are such a dick.
Yeah.
I cannot believe you.
You're right though.
I'm just so bad at picking men. I'm sure that's what she was thinking.
Oh no, another murderer. So yeah, they ended up I don't know how they caught him.
They caught him because of one of his cons. He like one of the things he liked to do with is that he would take out life insurance policies on people and then they'd end up dead.
Oh yeah.
The other thing he would do is that he would take out a life insurance policy on somebody and then present a cadaver saying that that person was dead. And so he'd fake people's deaths. And that's, so that's what he's doing. And one of his guys he met in prison or jail was going to be in on it and he was supposed to pay him. And he didn't pay him for like giving him information on a doctor or something. And so the inmate turned on him and said, hey, this guy's into some other stuff. And that's when they started looking into him. And
he's into some crazy shit.
Yeah. I think he stole a horse in Texas or something.
Who hasn't?
Exactly. That's minor leagues. But that was one of the things they're pursuing on him. And then the authorities in Chicago heard about that he was involved in some things going on with some scams. And that's when they started looking into him thinking, huh, there are a lot of people missing around him in Chicago, which I don't know what the police were doing prior to that in Chicago, but that kind of is what alerted them to him in the Chicago area.
Well, he also had a doctor that would pick up the bodies and skeletonize them because they'd sell them to medical schools, which is another creepy thing. So medical school has a skeleton, or doctor, whoever it is, buys a skeleton for their office. And that person was tortured and murdered and they don't even know that. But yeah, this doctor was doing that. And again, you're showing up at this hotel. There's a pristine body of like a 25-year-old woman and you're not going to question it. And he didn't even get in trouble. I think he was one of the people that what's it called? Your witness for the prosecution. Yeah, no. I can never think of anything when Mike's in front of my face. I take the mic off and I'm really, really well-spoken. Put a microphone on my face and me talk really good sometimes. So, So I don't know how that guy didn't get, but whatever.
The 1800s. I bet a lot of people got away with a lot of stuff then.
Yeah. Well, I know they used to grave rob for medical schools because they weren't allowed to like do autopsies or whatever. They weren't allowed to open up bodies, so they had to steal them or something like that.
So was the murder house like demolished or what happened to it?
Yeah, it got demolished, I think, in like around 19, maybe 20 or something like that. So he, when he built this thing, he had multiple contractors working on it. And I guess he would fire somebody after they kind of got a little too much knowledge of it. He didn't want to
fire them.
Yeah. Well, I think he disappeared. Actually did.
But. Release the hounds.
And so supposedly he's the only one that actually knew the full design of the house. And so that no one that was involved in the designing or building of it knew everything. And so he had all these, like Mike was, or Kevin was talking about, they have all these trap doors and everything. And he used it as ways of torturing people. And then he was able to basically look in on people as they were dying and things like that. So very, very sadistic, manner in which he used this house to torture and kill people. And I think he was convicted of killing 9 people, but they were saying there were so many bones and body parts within this murder house that they couldn't tell like who they belonged to or
not
how
back
they,
then.
Yeah, there's they no couldn't DNA put them together to know how many bodies there actually
just
were.
Just count the femurs. You just pick one bone, you count how many.
Yeah.
And then divide by two.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
I did once kill a one-legged man. Can't pin that on me because you had even number.
So they decided to destroy the house, I guess, because it was haunted.
No, they were going to use it as some kind of museum, and I think it mysteriously burned down. But they think that someone did it on purpose.
You got to get rid of it.
Yeah,
you got to get rid of that house. What? I mean, would I go? Yes, absolutely.
I know. Right? Oh, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. But you got to get rid of it. I mean, come on.
You got to burn it mysteriously. Yeah.
No, I mean, as the mayor or whatever would just have it raised and put something else there. I would assume. I don't know.
It's an important piece of American history.
It's cool to be, not cool, but you know, like people love to go places where things happened. Yeah. I don't know. People just, what do they call that? The macabre?
The macabre.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Am I using the right word?
Yes.
The macabre. But yeah, people like to, they go to places, like you can go to the hotel room that Chris Farley died in, and yeah.
What?
Chris Farley's dead.
Is it haunted?
By a funny ghost, right? You wake up in the middle of the night, wake up! It's my horrible Chris Farley impersonation.
You actually, your physical motion looked very accurate.
Yeah. It's going to come through well.
You're
going to
live in a van down by the way. Yeah. Don't just hear someone screaming and be like, that doesn't sound like Chris Farley at all.
What about Ted Bundy?
What about him?
He wasn't on the thing, but I guess we can talk about him.
Well, you mentioned him earlier.
Yeah, he's pretty much your stereotypical serial killer as far as when people think of a serial killer, in that he was a good-looking man, he was charismatic. I've heard different accounts, but fairly intelligent.
He was his own defense, right?
Yeah, he went to law school. He was quite cunning. So all of those things, he's very dangerous, very introspective in some regards. But you know, there's some interesting things about him, for example, and something I've encountered recently, which is that no matter how awful of a person and no matter how convincing the evidence, there's always people that are going to believe that the person's innocent until they confess to it. And Ted Bundy's mom and a lot of his friends were adamantly supportive of him, that he didn't have anything to do with this. And it usually falls in the same categories. You know, we know him, we know when he's lying, and he could never capable of that, which I think that's just kind of, it seems like most people believe that. And I think we would all probably fall into that same category if someone very close to us was considered a serial killer. But eventually Ted Bundy confessed to a lot of the crimes. And then his mother kind of turned more to, yeah, that's a picture of Ted.
That's Theodore.
Yeah.
Nice old Theodore.
Turned more to trying to defend him against other accusations, like, well, he may not have killed her, and just that kind of defense with him. But very strange individual. I mean, supposedly he had, one of the weird things about his childhood was that when he was raised, his grandparents, he was told, were his parents, and his mother, he was told, was his sister. And
that happens every now and then. I've actually heard that story more than once.
Yeah.
From people. I don't know.
Why is everybody looking at Mike?
You didn't even see that, Mike. You were looking at me and he's going like this. No, but I've heard that. I want to say, well, whatever. But yeah.
And so at times he seemed to attribute, and apparently his grandfather, he attributed him as being an incredibly abusive and aggressive individual. But then during other interviews, he said he had a very loving, normal childhood. Like I said, I think depending on what he was trying to accomplish in a given interview, he had very differing views about why he did things. And a lot of it with all the, John Wayne Gacy, the same thing, is that they try to rationalize as to why they did what they did. They're not very accepting of it. And there's certainly no remorse, which it's very unsettling to hear them talk about what they did, because they just talk about it in such a casual manner. That as if killing somebody is just something that they did, as simple as, you know, having lunch.
What did Ted Bundy do?
He killed primarily women in their early 20s. I believe they had long brown hair, I think was kind of his thing that he went after. And he was all over. He started in Washington
State. But he's dead.
Yeah, he ended in Florida. And basically, that's he kind of just went on a tear where he was killing women, and he would lure them in. He drove the Volkswagen Bug, that's kind of famous for that. And he would usually fake an injury or something that would get a woman that was willing to help him to get near him, and then he would attack them.
I'm over here laughing, but it's not about that. Have you heard the meme, Ted Cruz is the Zodiac Killer?
Yes.
It's so hysterical. But sorry, go ahead. We'll get into that in a minute. I was going to ask you, so Ted Cruz, Zodiac Killer, yes or no?
I'm going to go with no on that one.
There's a lot of, as you're talking about that, I'm like going through some tweets. Ted Cruz was born in Calgary. The Zodiac Killer's first two victims were named Cal and Gary. Zodiac Ted. sorry, go ahead.
No, was the Zodiac Killer next?
No, actually, we were just going to talk about those two people, but I just thought it was funny. We can talk about anything, though. So do you think, let's say something horrible happens in a house, Ted Bundy's house, not Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, the murder castle. Do you think that there's ghosts? Do you think there's hauntings in there afterwards? Do you think there's something that's like a bad juju, bad vibe that hangs out there?
I don't know. I've never seen a ghost.
Yeah.
I'll just assume there is.
So you think they would haunt him? Like, I would come back and I would haunt the fuck out of that guy.
I don't think you could. I don't think they have a. I don't think there's a choice.
You think you're stuck there?
Yeah, I think it's just that's just the way it is.
Ugh, what if you get murdered in a McDonald's bathroom? Then and you're just stuck there.
You're screwed. Yeah, man. Until they tear it down and rebuild delicious. Something else. Yeah, you always French fries smell delicious.
Yeah, then they tear it down and they turn it into like I don't know, like a paper box manufacturing place. So you're just sitting there watching paper boxes being manufactured for eternity.
You just like blow papers off somebody's desk.
I bet a version of you might be trapped there. I wonder if a version of you is trapped everywhere. Like if you consider space and time, and then if time is all in one dimension, then and if we have free will, then every
we don't.
I know. Let's pretend like we have free will.
No, we get into this argument all the time about free will.
I love talking about that stuff.
But let's say if we do, and time's already written, then there must be another dimension whereby we're able to make as many free will decisions that we want. So if that, in other words, in as time is all set out, but time for in a different dimension is wait, hold on. So the past, the present, and the future are all set for me on this one path that I'm on. But if I make a different decision, like let's say Savannah B does this right now, well now there's that path, and so there's the past, the present, and the future for that path. So there's a bunch of different paths. So I wonder if maybe there's a place where sort of a version of you kind of exists.
It all kind
of
comes together.
But then you kind of can go anywhere you want anyway. Sorry,
I've always been interested with time. The more and more, actually, the older I get, the less I think it's even relevant because it's all arbitrary. We base things off of just this happenstance that our Earth spins.
Well, that's just how we measure it.
That's how we, But without that measurement, then what is time without
the
measurement?
Think about when you walked in here to start this podcast. Yeah, right? But something happened, and it's not here anymore.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we don't... That doesn't mean... I don't... Yeah, but you can't...
There's something linear. That? There's something... So time exists.
You can't say that it's linear. You don't know that
there
it's
is. There is. If you can measure it, you can measure it, then it's there.
But it's... No, I don't believe that at all.
But it's physics.
So. Wait, physics is, time is physics?
Yeah,
what are you absolutely. Saying linear, though?
I don't believe... Just because you believe that science shows something to be true now doesn't mean that it's actually true.
No, I don't.
All. I mean, we've shown that through history.
Time is on a. Let's play the game. What's that called?
Continuum.
Nope. You have like the x axis, the y axis, the z axis. What are those axes called?
Yeah,
but it's all theoretical.
So that's the fourth dimension. So it's really not on that axis.
But I mean, it's considered to be on an axis. Well, it's considered to be there and moving, and we can measure it.
It's theoretical. You can't prove that.
Sure, you can. I can prove that there's time.
Okay, prove it to me.
Okay, bring me back to the moment when you walked in here. Let's go backwards to the moment when
just
you walked in.
Just because it's, and then now this will go to that talk that we had way, 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 way back. If things existed only, and they only knew they were in two dimensions, right? they can't possibly conceive of a third dimension.
Right. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the third dimension actually exists for the two-dimensional people. And if the fourth dimension is time, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean it actually.
But it does.
We're just.
This is how we're perceiving it in this unified way.
But that's just how you perceive it.
That's only how we.
How the hell did serial killers get into this?
That doesn't mean it's just because we perceive something doesn't necessarily mean that it's true.
Exactly. Yep. I agree with that.
Okay. Okay. Our perception of it is incomplete because we don't understand. But we can perceive it. So if you're looking at that, again, I remember that talk we were having, piece of paper. We live on a piece of paper hanging over a pool table, and you see flashes of colors go by, and you go, everyone's trying to figure out what that is, and they're scientists, and they're like, oh, it's this, and they try to come up with it. And then finally, if you look in the three-dimensional world, it's the pool cubes or the pool balls going back and forth. So are we perceiving time like them? Maybe, but it's still happening. It's still there.
I don't know.
But it is because the fact
just because I can't prove that it's not something else.
Here's a measurement of time.
Doesn't mean that that's like your answer is the only correct answer.
Well, no. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying, okay, the way we perceive time in this linear fashion is the way that we're stuck in time right now. This is X, Y, and I guess that's
I guess my part is if there is ghosts and they're constantly repeating something and they're on some weird loop, then time doesn't apply to them.
Well, it does because
it doesn't really apply to
something.
Us either. I don't know if it is or not. That doesn't mean it. I'm saying loop because I don't know how else to define it.
Here's,
but if they're constantly going through the same motions and you're constantly seeing the same things, like some people would say, yeah, this ghost does this or this whatever does this same thing all the time or whatever the case. I'm only saying that and we say loop because I don't know how else to define it. That doesn't mean that time exists.
Let's say you could capture time in a fishbowl.
And then I guess it wouldn't be linear, would it? If it.
Well, the way we experience
linear
it is,
doesn't mean it loops. It just goes.
You're right. And now, it could be going in a circle for all we know. So we can only experience it this way. Just like
there's still people that think the Earth is flat, Kevin. Isn't that crazy?
It isn't. So you're looking down at the pool table. Remember that. You're looking down at the pool table. You're seeing the flash of lights. It's the same thing. We can only look down at the pool table of time and we can only experience it in this one forward moving aspect. In theory, if you could somehow see the fourth dimension, everything that ever happened, never is, or ever will be, or ever was, could all be in technically one area. It all exists together. And, you know, you move. And again, it's hard to describe because how do you describe something that you've never seen? So we're experiencing it in this linear format. But yeah, the time can exist all at once in together. But I know it's hard to how do you put that in words?
And theoretically it does, which doesn't make any sense to me because I only have a three-dimensional mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me.
I have a fourth-dimensional mind. Should see the fucking colors in here.
LSD brings that up.
So yeah, I don't know. I hear stories, but you know what? I have yet to see a freaking ghost.
Me too.
Or anything weird.
But
so
really,
I saw
one.
Some weird stuff.
Oh, when you meditated? Wait, is this? Whoa, when you meditated?
Wait a minute.
This is different.
Wait a minute. You floated? Different.
No.
Oh, meditated. I said levitated.
No. But speaking of floating and weird stuff, you guys ever play that light as a feather, stiff as a board game when you were a kid and you lift people up with your fingers?
I've heard of it. I've never played it, no.
Failed miserably, yeah.
Really?
Of course.
It didn't fail for us.
All right, John, lay on the floor.
What are you talking about? I remember lifting people all the way up. But that's another story. Yeah.
This is officially what we call off the tracks.
I didn't start it, though.
I know. I just asked if you'd think that staying at the H.H. Holmes house would have been
haunted.
I'll give the mic back.
I'm sorry. I've been
and now I'd like to pass the mic. Beastie Boys. No. I don't know. Would I be scared? Yes. I'd be scared shitless to stay in a haunted castle or something just because I don't know. But what am I scared of? I don't know. Maybe there's ghosts. I've never seen one. If I saw one, I'd be like if I literally came up, no, I'd probably say it was some sort of mental issue.
So there's a podcast, I think it's called Unexplained. Mm-hmm. And he tells a story that it's very thought provoking to me. He says that when the ships arrived on the beach, the, I guess the Native Americans who were there to see it, they had no sort of context for this. And the way they described it was the water was kind of rippling in an unusual manner. And it was like they didn't see the ships. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, if you kind of get used to your life the way it is, then you might, things might happen right in front of you and you just kind of don't even understand how to see it, so you don't see it. Your mind kind of, it's kind of like the blind spot. You just fill it in as though nothing happened.
That's cool. That makes sense.
It doesn't make any sense to me. It freaks me the heck out, but.
It's your whole brain's playing tricks on you.
Repeat that?
Your mind's just playing tricks on you. It's almost like it's, you're seeing this thing happen, like the Native Americans are seeing, there's this whole ship. But they can't comprehend that something like that could even possibly exist. So they're almost subconsciously removing it from their mind, and then it's all they see is the waves rippling in a weird, unnatural manner. You know, because it's kind of like there's no possible way that anything like this could possibly ever exist. So they're, it's almost like it's completely removed.
But then on the other hand, on the other side of that coin are the people who are constantly looking for this stuff and they don't find it, ghost hunters and things like that. And they never really get, Maybe they're looking too hard.
Maybe it's like one of those weird pictures where you're supposed to stand so many meters away from it, and then you're supposed to look beyond the picture to see the picture.
Yeah, you get like double vision. Remember those back in the 90s?
Yeah, they're awful. I could never see the stupid sailboat or anything. But yeah, and then like they're looking too hard for it, and you never see it. Yeah,
you just have to look double. If you kind of cross your eyes, but then you see it in reverse, but it still works kind of technically. I learned how to game the system even as a child. I'm like, just cross your eyes.
I don't know. It never worked for me. I don't know.
Wait, can we talk about one more thing?
Yeah.
Actually, I had two more things, but I want to see what you thought about the whole JonBenet Ramsey stuff. Oh,
he wrote a book about it.
The new stuff. I know the book. Sorry, I was like, shit.
What specifically do you mean by the new stuff?
Like wasn't there a CBS documentary revealing a lot of information. Do you think that this information, what did you think about it?
I haven't seen that documentary. I've read it a lot and watched some of the interviews, but I haven't seen that one specifically. But I mean, to me, with that case, the ransom note is the single most important factor in the case, because it's the one thing that you can definitively tie to the crime, her being killed. And a lot of the new evidence is they're trying to bring in DNA, and it's minuscule microscopic DNA that they have no idea whether it has anything to do with the case, and trying to utilize that to say point towards a given intruder or something like that. And so I feel like that our ability to be able to find smaller and smaller amounts of DNA is creating a reasonable doubt, basically, because there's DNA there. You know, DNA is not fingerprints. It's not blood or semen. It's not something that you can say that person was definitively there. DNA can get there a number of ways. So to me, I mean, I thought it was great that they brought in a lot of experts. I think the case definitely needs to be looked at. The Ramseys have always bothered me. Even though I don't think John Ramsey has anything to do with it, he's a very intelligent guy. I mean, I'm very impressed with him when I hear him speak, but he's very arrogant and he really grates on me. And I think that was one of the big things, early on with the case, is that he's out in front of the media and that arrogance is coming through, which people don't like.
Right.
And then they felt like Patsy Ramsey was not reacting in the manner that she should, probably because she was medicated. So you've got one person who's arrogant and one person who's not acting appropriately, and you've got suspicion. And I think that to some extent that's still there, but just Patsy's gone now. She passed away. So it's John out there with his kind of condescending, not really likable person. And to me, unfortunately, that's a huge factor whenever the public's involved, is likability. And I don't think he has it. And Burke certainly did not come across well in the interviews. He was... just, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with whether he's guilty or not, but he's just excessively smiling, laughing inappropriately. But I mean, that's nerves, but he didn't come across well.
So do you buy the theory that like he hit her in the back of the head?
Well, considering that there are active defamation cases against the people who are...
no, I do not.
oh, okay, and, sorry.
And I got to say that the statute of limit, yeah, statute of limitations on libel is 2 years. And so I was very pleased when, at least for where I published the book, very pleased when the 2 years had passed since I published the book on the JonBenet Ramsey case. But I certainly think that that there were people within the house that were likely involved in what occurred.
Now, if a person wants to learn about the JonBenet Ramsey case, which book can they read?
That if you're referring to my book, that'd be Umbrella of Suspicion, which is available through Amazon
Under John Taylor.
If you just put into the search term Umbrella of Suspicion within Amazon, it'll pull it up.
And it's linked to my website as well. So if you come visit waitwhatif.com, you should see it on there. And there's also your other book, which is
Isolated Incident, which is on the death of Nancy Cooper here in Cary, North Carolina.
And if there's any interest in these JonBenet or Nancy Cooper, or gosh, I can't remember what the first thing we talked about when you were on the show. This is your fourth time on the show, but John's been on a bunch. Just look back for John Taylor episodes, and if you're interested in true crime and all that good stuff, then by all means check it out. I'm just winding it up because we're at like an hour and a half. And do you know what? I'm not going to edit this one. I'm just going to print tomorrow because I got too much stuff to do. Yeah. Just putting it on there. Yay. Putting it out there. So I hope you enjoyed. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
It was a good talk. I thought it was fitting for Halloween. I think anyways. Just because, you know, why not sensationalize someone else's misery, right? For your entertainment. That's what we do here. Yeah. That's all. Thanks, guys.
Over and out.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast and at WWIPodcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.